When I bought my two-bedroom condominium in Newton 12 years ago, I was pretty sure I had found the perfect living situation, a kind of communal paradise. I would have what felt like my own small house, an annual tax deduction, a built-in community made up of the owners of the other five units, and best of all, I wouldn't have to do any work anymore because it was a condominium. And in exchange for this perfection, I would have condominium meetings where I found that the six of us were much closer to being strangers than we were a close-knit community. And not just strangers, but strangers with different values, different means, and a diversity of ideas on how and when to finance expensive repairs, approve condo increases, and whether or not to hire landscapers, or whether to rake, mow, and shovel ourselves. 2 weeks ago, I discovered evidence of rodents, mice, I believe, in my perfect condo living situation. The exterminator was scheduled to come on election day, and he did at 8 a.m. that Tuesday morning. I went out to the driveway eager to meet him, and one of my condo neighbors, a new neighbor, happened to be out by her car. Seeing the exterminator's truck, she called out across the driveway to me saying, "Good luck with the mice. I bet they're Democrats." "Doubt it," I replied and smiled. And then 2 hours later, I ran into this same neighbor at our polling place and thought, well, we've just canceled each other out. This past weekend, a friend who has moved into a large condominium complex in western Massachusetts and likely harbored at least some of the same naive and happy expectations that I once had about communal living, told me how surprised she was just days after she moved in when she received an envelope in the mail. Thinking it must be a letter of welcome, she discovered it was actually a picture of the planter that she had put on her back patio, along with the message, "Please remove, not allowed, the management." I don't want to disparage condominium living. Mice, politics, and rules aside, there are many benefits to the close living involved in joint ownership, but there are just as many challenges. It's little wonder that so many of us these days look for communities of like-minded people online, or at least people with similar interests and similar passions, from nursing mothers to political junkies to dating services to gardening chat lines. We can zero in on our specific interest, filtering out everything else. My condo neighbor and I could probably happily chat online for years about dogs. She has a greyhound and I have a schnauzer, and never even consider broaching the subject of politics or elections. And that would be a fine subject-specific cyber relationship, but it wouldn't be a real relationship. You know, we denounce technology and today's culture in general for creating a society in which we feel so much more isolated than we did in years past. And we say we yearn for the closeness of community, but then, as my colleague Lynn Unger writes, in the real world, that is, in real communities of flesh and blood people, we are plagued with people whose dogs bark and whose Christmas decorations are ugly, who listen to music we don't like and speak languages we can't understand. And even when communities are intentionally structured and carefully planned, as Brook Farm was back in the 1840s, even they turn out not to be the utopia originally envisioned. And yet, looking back now on the transcendentalist design for Brook Farm, it still sounds ideal. Every person in that community would work according to his or her interests and talents, and all were to be paid equally, the same amount of money for the work they were able to do. And women would not be paid less than men. The community would be self-sustaining. Everything would be shared equally, enabling all of the members to have an ideal balance of work and time for leisure. And what could be better? And for a time, Brook Farm did work, but the experiment ended after about 6 years. So maybe the lesson for us is that there are no such things as utopian communities. There are only communities. And we are thankful for them. Families, neighborhoods, churches, interest groups, imperfect as they all are, they are also both real and life-sustaining. And so it's good to have this time of Thanksgiving each year to pause and take stock and give thanks. What will your prayer or reflection of thankfulness be this week? Mine is almost always the same. I am always grateful for the simple blessing of another year. And just as the Hallmark cards say, I too am grateful for family and friends, for work and for health, for memories and future hopes. And this year, I am grateful to be here. And I am grateful for all of you. In her poem called Circles, Mary Oliver says, "I am so happy to be alive in this world. I would like to live forever, but I am content not to." I think it's courageous of her to admit that she wants to live forever. Most days I do too, but I don't say it out loud. But why not? Why not admit we love being here? We love being alive, going to sleep each night and waking up to a new morning and new day, a day filled with emails and phone calls, parent-teacher conferences, football games, election results, and newspaper headlines, to the work we do and the gardens we till, the travel we fantasize about, the books we read, the pets we pamper, the children and grandchildren, partners and friends we love. It is good to see this world, imperfect as it is, as an amazing place. And it's good to ponder our place in it. On Monday afternoon of this week, I attended a memorial service for the Reverend Jack Mendelson at his church, First Parish, Bedford. The sanctuary is a beautiful, pristine, colonial-style meeting house with a highly polished antique chandelier that hangs from the ceiling. And not far from that chandelier now hangs a silver disco ball. It would be right about there. And to the side, in the front of the sanctuary, on the wall, there is a large mural photograph of the Andromeda Galaxy. If you should look up Andromeda Galaxy, you will learn that it has over a trillion stars, and that it and our galaxy, the Milky Way, are expected to come together to form a new and bigger galaxy in about 3.75 billion years. In looking at this large mural, you immediately get a sense of time and space and infinity. And the effect of the silver disco ball is a projected image of what looks like stars continuing out of the galaxy onto the wall of the sanctuary and extending up onto the ceiling of the church. And with the magic of a remote control device, my friend, the Reverend John Gibbons, minister of the church, is able to make the disco ball turn. And that makes the stars appear to dance, as they did Monday afternoon during the final rousing hymn down by the riverside. There's nothing quite like infinity to give us a sense of awe and wonder and amazement at life, and especially at our own lives on our own small spinning planet Earth. Here we all are, trying to figure out our place in the scheme of things, trying to figure out how to live together in the real worlds of our lives, in communities and towns and cities and nations filled with flesh and blood people, people that make up these communities with their barking dogs and grating music and strange languages. But we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to figure out how to live together in this world. And I guess I find it encouraging that a six-year-old likes her teacher because she cries at Silent Night, and that there are 93-year-olds who believe they still have a lot to learn. I need to update you on my neighbor, because last Friday night we ran into each other again, this time walking our dogs, and she stopped and said to me, "Aren't you so happy about this week?" And I thought, maybe she means the weather. "Yes," I said. "But aren't you glad he won?" she persisted. "I'm confused," I admitted. "When the exterminator was here on Tuesday, I thought you said that you thought the mice were Democrats." "No, no," she replied. "What I said was, if they're Democrats, let them live." I missed that entirely. And then she said to me, "My son is biracial. How could I not be happy?" I think, well, what if my first interpretation had been correct? What if we'd found that our political perspectives were truly at odds? It would have been fine, because negotiating differences is part of the joy and the difficulty and the learning and the challenges and the understandings that come from being together in community, whether that community is our own family, a small condo association, an ideal utopian place, or a 300-year-old church in transition. As we think of the communities of our lives, giving thanks for them at this time of Thanksgiving, I want to close with a question that you ministers in our respective chapters have been using in spiritual exercises in the past year. The question is, whose are you? And the reading that follows, built on this question, is by Reverend Victoria Safford. Whose are you? Who carries you in their heart, thinks of you, whether you think of them or not? Whose are you? Who are your people? The ones who make a force field you can almost touch. Whose are you? Who is within your circle of concern? Whose are you? To whom are you responsible, accountable? Whose care is yours to provide? Whose are you? When you look in the mirror in the morning, whose bones do you see? Whose blood runs in your veins? Who are those people stretching back in time beyond memory? Whose are you when you walk out of your house into the light of day? To whom in this wide world do you belong? By whom are you called? Whose are you? At the end of the day, through the longest night, in the valley of the shadow of death and despair, who holds your going out and coming in, your waking and sleeping? Who, what, holds you in the palm of its hand? Let us give thanks this day for the people and the places and everything in this world that give our lives meaning and keep us still learning and loving and part of this glorious, awesome, star-filled universe. So may it be. Amen. Our final hymn in honor of Thanksgiving is For the Beauty of the Earth. It's inserted in your order of service, and I would invite you to feel free to change the gender of God if you would like.